Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming here from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. Now, the program we're about to hear is with a gentleman. We're not going to use his last name. He's a Gulf War veteran who came back. And, of course, is severely ill with the Gulf War illness, which the government says doesn't exist. I remember going to medical meetings where they would have their experts come in to tell us that there was no such thing as Gulf War illness, despite the fact that over 200,000 Gulf War veterans are the men who went overseas to fight for American freedom in 1990 and 1991. Over 200,000 of them have reported and registered that they have Gulf War illness, and I understand, although I haven't been able to verify it, that the figure may be almost twice that many. Certainly a large number of these young men have died, and actuarially that would never be the case. The government has admitted that there seems to be a relationship between anterior lateral sclerosis and the Gulf War illness, or the people who went to the Gulf, but everything is being done to block any suggestion that this is a real clinical entity. And yet, of course, it is so very, very similar to the chronic fatigue syndrome, which the government also says doesn't exist, or to the symptoms that so many of our young people have gotten after being inoculated for anthrax while they were in the military. And in fact, an awful lot of the pilots who were in the reserve have actually resigned from the military reserve because they wouldn't take the anthrax vaccinations because so many of their friends who had taken them had been permanently incapacitated. Well, let's go to Mark here because, of course, he has to live with this disease. Hi, Mark. How are you?
Hi. How are you doing?
It's Mike, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is it Mike or Mark?
Mike.
Okay, Mike. Well, now, of course, how soon after you came back from the Gulf did you have the illness?
Well, I was diagnosed with Guillain-Barré syndrome.
At what point were you diagnosed with that?
When I was sort of still in the field.
All right, fine. Now, for our listeners, Guillain-Barré is a progressive paralysis. It's very similar to poliomyelitis, except it usually doesn't kill the people. It doesn't get into the bulbar area, and if it does, it's reversible. And so usually the motor weakness that that people have it will disappear, unlike with polio, where much of the weakness is permanent. So did you have a permanent weakness as a result of your Guillain-Barré, or did it occur?
I can't feel from my elbows down and from my knees down anymore.
All right, so you have sort of a peripheral neuritis then.
Right.
All right, fine. And so then were you militarily discharged from... Were you given a medical discharge?
Well, it wasn't looking that way until I actually got Congress involved. And after I got Congress involved, that's when they started doing their job.
All right. And was that after they took you off and tried to put you in a psychiatric hospital saying you had to be crazy?
No, that happened right after I went to Congress because they really wanted to do away with my testimony.
All right, fine. Well, now, why don't you tell the sequence of stories? You were actually over in the Gulf War. Of course, we're told there were no chemical or biological warfare agents that were released. I mean, General Schwarzkopf, incidentally, whose father worked with the CIA. And if you want to verify that, you can get the book Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, and find out that General Schwarzkopf's father had been working with the CIA to topple the Shah of Iran. But, of course, you can find that this goes from generation to generation. They have their people in key positions, and General Schwarzkopf, of course, commands Desert Storm, gets great press from the media, comes home and said, none. none of our young men were exposed to the chemical weapons, and he knows it isn't true. In fact, eventually, the government was forced to admit that 100, 1,000, 10,000, 50,000, we don't know how many, but eventually I think they admitted that 50,000 of our men were exposed to chemical weapons, and yet General Schwarzkopf had gone before Congress and testified that it didn't happen. But
hey,
then, of
sir,
course, beg pardon?
Sir, my commander also came down sick, but he was worse than I.
Right.
He was actually getting fully paralyzed and so forth.
Right.
He went to Walter Reed because he had some important people in his family tree, and they made it where, you know, they wouldn't blow him off anymore. So He went to Walter Reed, and he was in a treatment facility there, and he was in the same room with Schwarzkopf. He was getting the same treatment Schwarzkopf was getting.
Was Schwarzkopf actually got treatment then?
Yeah, he left the theater early. He wasn't the guy that took over as there was a Marine Corps gentleman that took over as like the military governor afterwards.
Okay, fine.
And Schwarzkopf had this treatment called plasmapheresis.
Plasmapheresis, that's where they take the blood and they sort of filter it out and take out the bad things and give it back to you. Go ahead.
And the long story on that is that, you know, that should be a burden of proof right there, something happened. Because, I mean, I don't know if you know, he went and he signed the ceasefire agreement in Safwan. And that was right next to Kamisea. If you don't want to blame it on enemy weapons, you can always blame it on the stupid engineers that were blowing up all those bunkers full of chems.
Okay, now Kamisea was a place over there where there were a lot of Iraqi or maybe even American chemical weapons. We don't know. Some people say there were a lot of American.
I visualized them, sir, and they were.
They were American chemical weapons.
They were Russian, East German, and Jordanian of all countries, and some were American NATO marking.
And so they had to destroy them. I mean, we couldn't let the American people know that, so they blew them all up. And when they blew them up, Wire Boys got exposed to all these chemical weapons. Surprise, surprise, surprise. But then we can't admit that, so we lie to the American people, and we lie, and we lie, and we lie. And then finally we admit, oh, shucks, we lied. Well, but it was only just a few that were exposed, well, a few hundred or a few thousand, and on and on and on. We're going to have to take a quick break, and when we get back, Mike's going to tell us more of this amazing, amazing story. But right now, of course, we want to remind our listeners that when we have leaders that we can't trust, then no man's life or property or family are safe. And to help you to understand what's really going on and the spiritual forces that are at work in society, Radio Liberty is presenting an all-day seminar a week from tomorrow at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course, and we do hope that many of you will want to sign up for that. It's going to go from early in the morning till late in the evening. Well, the doors are going to open at 8 and close at 6. The program is going to run from 8:45 until 5. There's going to be a luncheon. We put together a great syllabus with all sorts of things that will help you to understand what's happening financially, the danger we face from biological warfare, and how you can prepare yourself, because, believe me, you cannot trust the government to protect you any more than those boys over in the Gulf in the military could trust the government to protect them. And then, of course, you must understand the spiritual component of what's going on today. And so we hope that many of you will decide right now you're going to come and join us. So there's going to be a luncheon. There's going to be a syllabus provided. But we have to know how many people are going to be there, and it's getting close to the cutoff time. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Come, bring your friends. We want to get as many people informed as we possibly can. And so far, we're getting an excellent response. But if you'd like to be prepared for what lies ahead, and let me tell you that in other countries, the middle class has been wiped out when they've gone into the financial crisis that we are facing. And if you're not prepared, why, you may well be one of those who is wiped out. And then, of course, fiscally and spiritually, you must be prepared. Call us right now.
Have you ever wondered about the boys we left behind in Vietnam, in Korea? Did you ever know that we left 25,000 American boys behind in Russia, in Siberia at the end of the Second World War? Have you ever wondered what really happened in Oklahoma City, what really happened with the TWA 800 that went down off the eastern coast about a year ago? Well, ladies and gentlemen, all of the subjects are well covered in a fascinating book by Craig Roberts entitled The Medusa File. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, order The Medusa File. Actually, Craig Roberts was a police officer working on the Oklahoma City bombing. Now, this book has been suppressed very effectively across America, and it's self-published, but I promise you that there's no other book I know that'll give you more contemporary history, frightening history that every American needs to know. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR now.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and our guest today is Mike, and of course, he was recommended to me by our friend Joyce Riley, who is head of the Gulf War Association, Gulf War Veterans Association, and trying to, of course, point out that we've abandoned our veterans who came back, and so many of them have died from the Gulf War. They didn't die in the Gulf War. They died from various forms of disease they contracted over there, or in some instances from the vaccines, the experimental vaccines that were used on our troops. Well, Mike is telling us that certainly the Kamchatka was this weapons depot. It was an Iraqi weapons depot. And here were all these weapons there. Did you actually go into the depot at all?
Yeah, because we were looking for intelligence and stuff like that. We're doing after everybody fled the area, that's what most guys have to do, is they have to, you know, spread out and find all the intelligence you need to find and so forth and so on.
Were you with an intelligence unit? Was that your job?
No, that's just what they do with the folks that are standing around, is they say, okay, you and you get in a patrol and go check out this, that, and the other, and come back and bring whatever you find, or, you know, tell us whatever you find, so forth and so on.
Now, where was Kamchatka? Was that in Kuwait, or was that in southern Iraq?
No, that was on right next to Highway 8, Alhammer Highway.
Right.
And it was known as Objective Gold to us. And it was right next to what they call Talil Air Base.
All right. Now, is that in Kuwait or is that in Iraq?
No, it's in Iraq.
Okay. So it must have been then in southern Iraq.
Well, they call it southern, but it's kind of, I guess I'd say it's southern Iraq.
Okay, fine. Well, you were there. I wasn't. So anyway,
right.
You find this weapons base, and I know I've talked to several people who were inside there, and they found that some of the chemical weapons actually were American-made, as well as Russian, Jordanian, and elsewhere.
Well, they had what they call NATO monograms, but they were U.S. origin. And see, I was over there before during the Iran-Iraq War. My job is weapons, is what, you know, my skill was in the military.
What were you doing there during the Iran-Iraq War? That was, of course,
I don't know if you remember Bush, Part One. He said, "My friend's enemy is my enemy too."
Well, we know that, of course, we backed Iraq during that terrible, bloody war.
Right, and that's what I was doing over there. Is I was assisting in doing away with the Iranian Revolutionary Guard.
Well, how do you mean by doing away with them?
Well, just like Bush said, you know, my friend's enemy is my enemy too.
But were you fighting them, or were you?
We were fighting them with. Should we say special ops?
All right. So you were working with some sort of a special operations unit then, is that it?
Yeah, because see, what was told to us is they can't send the army in without declaring war.
Right.
So what they did is, in turn, they just turned around and covertly assisted in the elimination of the Revolutionary Guard. I was anywhere from the Straits of Hormuz, which is the opening of the Persian Gulf into the Indian Ocean, all the way into Kukrit, That's as far inland of Iraq that I've been.
Well, were you still on active duty, or did they relieve you, seep-dip you, and put you under CIA control so that we could have plausible denial we weren't involved at all, and yet, of course, we would be killing the
enemy? I was told our unit was considered a DOD asset.
All right.
I mean, we were pretty much black ops. Our helicopters were black, and...
Black helicopters? My goodness, they say there are no black helicopters. But, of course, everybody knows that...
Well, you know what plausible deniability
right,
is, right?
Right.
Well, plausible deniability, the reason why we paint our helicopters black is that when we go and tear something up and then that country says, oh, it was Americans, and then the diplomats show up, they say, okay, what did they look like? And as soon as they say, you know, they're black, black helicopters look, you know, American and stuff like that, then they'll say, were there any markings on it? And they'll say, no. And then the diplomats will turn around and say, well, we don't own any black helicopters.
Right, of course, but we do. In fact, it's very interesting that there was an article August 15th, as I recall, Newsweek magazine talking about, the Afghan forces on our side were just about to take out Osama bin Laden and 1,000 al-Qaeda last November. A year ago, and they had them cornered. They were just about ready to liquidate them when in comes a fleet of black helicopters
right.
and rescues al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden. And of course, our government said, oh, well, we were just dropping off some special forces. Well, why would they rescue al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden? Unless maybe most of what we've been told isn't true, but let's get back to Iraq. Anyway, so you'd been there during the Iran-Iraq war, where we were illegally violating all international agreements, and we were actually fighting. Were we using the poison gas at that time on the Iranians?
Well, in Kukrit and in Halabja, I was close by for that issue. And that's when they killed all those Kurds and all those Iranian people in the village and all the Iranian guardsmen.
Well, now, of course, what were there Kurds in the southern? I thought the Kurds were from the far north.
No, they run from the far north all the way down the Iran-Iraq border. They pretty much, you know, find themselves living in Iran until Iran finds out they're there, and then they run them over the Iraqi border. And then when Saddam finds out they're there, they run them back. So there used to be a country there called Kurdistan.
Right.
And Iraq gobbled up that country, as they would say. And that's where the Kurds actually come from, because a lot of people ask me, who are the Kurds? I've never heard of them. But it's sort of like, you know, if Kashmir in India and Pakistan took it over, there would be, you know, Kashmirian people that would be upset and never let it down and so forth and so on. So that's who the Kurds are.
All right, well, let's just get back now. You were there, and how did they eliminate all these people? How were they simply shot? Or
airstrikes and artillery.
Okay.
Actually, our artillery cannons were overwatched by American soldiers so that they wouldn't put their next artillery shell in there until 8 minutes after the shell cooled, because... nerve canisters that are in artillery shells will melt and stick to the barrel and, of course, kill everybody that's there when it disperses.
So they were actually shooting then these artillery shells that were filled with poison gas?
Yeah, it was during Operation ELF-1 and ELF-2, and it was called ELF-1 and ELF-2 because Saddam Hussein was our Santa Claus against Iran.
Oh, yeah, we loved Saddam Hussein. In those days, he was the heroic, revolutionary hero, sort of the George Washington of Iraq.
Yep.
The American people have forgotten, we backed Saddam Hussein.
Well, we gave him fire, and he turned on us.
Well, we gave him fire anyway. So anyway, of course, then you're back here during the Gulf War, and you're still with one of these units. And you actually then went into the bunker where the poison gas and all of these things were, and some of it was NATO, and some of it was Russian, and some of it was Jordanian. Is that right?
Yeah, and East German.
Okay, and then, of course, our engineers go in, and, oh, we just got to get rid of all this terrible poison gas. Let's blow it up. You would think that somebody would wonder what's going to happen to all that poison gas when you blow it up. You'd be better off to bury it than to blow it up.
Well, see, I was told that this was all pre-planned. Everything was really secret about what we were doing. It's like we had to call for our next order type of deal.
Right.
And what I mean by that is they named Comacia, they named it Objective Gold for a reason. Supposedly, Comacia was where the majority of the, should you say, foreign governments' weapons were being stored, and that's why it was called Objective Gold. In other words, it was a golden opportunity to get rid of this stuff so that there wouldn't be any evidence.
Ought to think a little bit ahead, you know. If you want to get rid of it, you take it out and you dump it in the ocean, or you get rid of it by, you know, deactivating it. You don't blow it up and blow it all over our troops, unless, of course, you're incredibly stupid or incredibly evil.
Well, if you understand the Bush legacy, you'll understand that they only care about themselves and their friends.
You're talking about George Herbert Walker Bush, former director of the CIA, former vice president, former president of the United States.
Well, let's go on the legacy there, okay? It starts with his dad, Preston Bush.
Prescott Bush, right.
The long story short is, I mean, my great uncles and stuff, while they were fighting in France, in the fields of France, the Bushes were handing banknotes, oil, and steel over to the Nazis.
And if anybody doubts that, you want to get Alexander Robbins' book, Secrets of the Tomb, which we carry. And it goes into the fact that Prescott Bush was indicted during the Second World War, helping Adolf Hitler.
Conspiring with the enemy.
We cannot let the American people know that, because, of course, that would, of course, change your perception. And everything is perception. Everything is smoke and mirrors. You're not supposed to know what's really going on. We're going to have to take a break, and when we get back, we'll talk to Mike, who is there. And I think you'll be fascinated by his story. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me just simply mention, we do carry that book. It's called Secrets of the Tomb. It's written by Alexandra Robbins. It's the story of the Skull and Bones Society, which our president came from, which he said in his own biography, it's so secret, I can't even tell you about it. But, of course, it's really not secret. It's a satanic society. And of course, you want to get the book and read it. And they describe the Skull and Bones wedding, when the black robes and the black hoods and the strange pagan chants. And, of course, you would think that the president would simply denounce it, the oath he has taken of secrecy to this society. And we have a four-tape set on Skull and Bones. We have the book, The American Establishment. We even have a syllabus that has all of the names of every member of the Skull and Bones going back to 1833. And so you can get all of these items, the syllabus with all the names of all the members, the book, The American Establishment, the book, Secrets of the Tomb, and the four-tape set entitled Skull and Bones, all available from Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-544-8927. Let me also recommend, along that same line, the four-tape set on the Bohemian Grove, because the president and George Herbert Walker Bush have gone there, as has George Bush. You need to understand the pagan ceremonies that take place there. Could this be going on? Well, ladies and gentlemen, I keep telling you, we're involved in a spiritual battle, and most people do not understand what we're really up against. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to, or get the Brotherhood of Darkness special, and call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Get the information. Help us to get in other people's hands while there's still time.
Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about? Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war? Do you really believe that happened by accident? There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our four-tape set, Vietnam, The Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, The Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course we're going into the background of Mike's experience. And of course, he contracted a serious illness over there and has been incapacitated ever since then. So, and of course, then he was motivated to study the Gulf War Syndrome and where did it come from. And I don't know how much we're going to have a chance to cover. We're going to have to get him back on for several hours because we really need to have all of this information available, because he's done a real yeoman's job in tracking down the people who can tell you about the experiments that were performed on the American soldiers. Yes, they used experimental vaccines. Why should we be surprised if you've never seen the Rockefeller Committee report, which we carry, which comes out with a report from the general GAO, the government watchdog that purposes to, report when the government does things. They've used our troops for experiments time after time after time without their knowledge or consent. But don't you worry, they're developing vaccines that they are going to give us to protect us from the biological warfare. And, of course, you'll be asked to sign a consent saying, you know, it's experimental, you won't sue anybody, but you're going to have to take it, or, of course, it could be a crime or a misdemeanor under the Model State Emergency Health Powers Act. Well, Mike, why don't you get on with the story? Anyway, they blow this thing up, and were you close by when they did it?
Yeah, I was. I watched all the plumes. I was, downwind of it as well. I was camped out right south of the airfield.
And you think that General Schwarzkopf was poisoned as well?
That and the vaccines, of course.
All right, fine. And so you claim that he actually had plasmapheresis, as did your commander?
Yeah, and some other spooky stuff that I can't even scientifically call out the names.
What did they do for the soldiers who, of course, were...
Well, that's the funny thing, is my commander came back and told me what they told him. What they told him was that you don't need to tell a soul about what we did to you, because the treatment costs like $250,000, and we would not be able to afford to do this for every soldier. I mean, as if they knew that several of us were really bad sick and they were just going to look the other way because of dollars. I mean, it was all about money.
All right. Well, let's go to Fred, who's calling in here from Salinas. Hi, Fred. How you doing?
Yes, Dr. Stan. I just wanted to say that I remember very distinctly, as they was blowing up those bunkers there, there was one CNN crew got into inside one of those bunkers. And it was full of gas with American writings on it.
Right, of course. Yep. Well, we'd given Saddam Hussein all of the weapons. But you see, we can't let the American people realize that, because we're going over to war because this wicked Saddam Hussein has these weapons of mass destruction. And yeah,
I thought it was quite interesting that crew, that was the only one time that I got to see that.
Did you actually see that on television?
Yes, it was on a CNN, and it was it showed the American writings on the shelves.
So. Okay.
Wasn't that the salute to the Gulf War?
Yes.
And they don't show that. They used to show it every year in March.
Yeah, they don't show it anymore.
Well, we wouldn't want the American people to realize who gave Saddam all those terrible weapons that we've got to send our boys over to die to,
Take them back.
Okay, thanks. Anything else, Fred?
No, that's it.
Okay, bye-bye. All right, well, that was Fred from Salinas. And but then, Mike, of course, you, of course, get the part of the plumes, and you're getting sicker and sicker, and you actually developed Guillain-Barré syndrome over there?
Yes, sir.
All right, so then what happens? Do they send you home? Do they send you to Walter Reed or someplace?
No, they started pumping me full of pills and told me, take it easy, don't worry about it, you'll be all right, so forth and so on. And I come from hardy stock anyways, and... I was like, my arms and legs didn't work very well and stuff like that, and I kind of looked like a gimp. And then they started filling me for all this stuff, and then when I got home, they had the stuff they stuck needles in my arms. One was antibiotics, and the other one was antivirals.
Uh-huh, okay. In other words, they were treating you as if you'd had some sort of an infection.
Well, that's because, you know, my lips split up into my nose. I was bleeding out of every orifice I had, and I was just all kind of bad sick, and it was mysterious, and they turned around. And I guess they were trying to take care of anything or anything that could have been attacking me. Mm-hmm. See, I'd been over there before during the Iran-Iraq war, and I got what you call viral syndrome. And then they finally said that I had Rift Valley fever, and I survived it. And it was kind of funny because I was right next to Halabja at the time. And, you know, if you know about the Iraqis, they use Russian doctrine, which is mix biologicals with the chemicals.
Right.
And I think it's kind of a coincidence that I come down with this viral syndrome in 88 or 89, if my memory serves me well.
Well, it would have been 88 because the war, I think the war ended in 88.
Okay, then it was around late summer 88,
right.
The Halabja thing went down, and we were kind of doing something to assist and advise. And
now, were you at that big battle where the Iranians lost so many people that they had to sue for peace? I mean,
there was hundreds of thousands of bodies.
Right. And
and
at that point, then Ayatollah Khomeini sued for peace. There was nothing else he could do.
Right.
That killed as hundreds of thousands of people with our help, of course.
Yeah. Well, long story short is, you know, I've been plagued with so-called Gulf War syndrome since that late summer of 1988.
Now, did you get a medical disability then?
Well, like I said, they were chumping me for like 20%, and then they said all my other problems are psychosomatic. Supposedly that means, you know, you think you're sick.
Right.
But I have blood tests that the VA calls me a dead man walking.
Right.
I'm infected with 3 stealth viruses, in other words, things that weren't naturally in the environment. They've been laboratory made.
Right. Now, did the V8 actually tell you that, or did you track that down through a
course? It was a doctor that says, I don't understand how you're still living with the, you know, the red blood cell problem that you have. I have leukocytopenia.
All right. Now, for our listeners, that's a shortage of white cells. Leukocytes, right? Go ahead.
Right, and then my red blood cells are mutated. The outer core of the red blood cells have like spikes on them, and they're smaller than they should be, but I have more of them.
Right.
And then, you know, all the pathogens that I'm walking around with, because I'm also walking around with that mycoplasma fermentin incognitus,
which was also
made in a laboratory.
That is a genetically manufactured mycoplasma, manufactured by our government in violation of all international laws, but they can't admit that because that would mean we violated the biological treaty. And so anybody who looks into the mycoplasma fermentis, you know, it gets into real trouble. That's what happened to Dr. Garth Nicholson. But
right.
Actually, there's a doctor from the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology who's actually taken out a patent on this, and we have copies of the patent. And on that patent, he tells you that it's found in chronic fatigue. It's found in all AIDS cases. Isn't that interesting?
That's Shai Ching Lo, right?
That's Shai Ching Lo, right. And,
yeah, I met him in person.
What did he have to say? Did you talk to him about what they've done?
I sure did, and he kind of blew me off and stuff until I told him that I'd have his ass in a courtroom. And the long story short was I was a test specimen where they drew blood from me, and he admitted what the Army does is when they draw your blood, they don't send him the blood until 3 days later, and that's why they can't find any samples of this stuff in our blood. The stuff kind of dies.
Well, of course they have to have it chilled, you know, not totally frozen, but kept.
Well, it was in room temperature for 3 days.
Well, first, and it's no good at all. They know that. So is he aware of you know, what's going on? Does he know that they used you know, thousands of our boys as guinea pigs without their knowledge or consent?
He's well aware of it, but he like in his psyche, he thinks, you know, it's a paycheck, it's a job, and I'm just going to follow orders. I mean, he literally said it like that, and I said, but sir, where's your conscience? I mean, you're supposed to be a doctor in the Hippocratic Oath, you know, first do no harm.
What did he say to that?
He just, you know, pretty much didn't want to converse with me anymore. Plus that, he also told me about a doctor that wound up dead at Walter Reed. He was in Washington, D.C. riding a motorcycle on a one-way street, and he got hit head-on, mysteriously. And he was in Dr. Engel's party in the Gulf War Clinical Comprehensive Evaluation Program they got there.
Mm-hmm.
And he was an islander. He had this I think it's like a Guamanian name. It was a special name. Maybe I can tell you what his name was later so you can get the proof that this dude was mysteriously killed.
Well, of course, recently, within the last few months, there have been about 10 of these top-notch scientists that have been working on all these biological warfare agents, and they've all sort of mysteriously died, you know. Some guy stopped the car in the middle of this bridge, a busy bridge, and they say he just jumped overboard and committed suicide. You know, and nobody believes he committed suicide. So many of them all across the world, I'm sure that there are people who perhaps know about some of these bizarre experiments that have been going on.
Well, I got a cousin that's going to University of Miami, and that Cuban scientist that they weren't able to do away with him, the one that supposedly says they came, as he was going into his house, they came up behind him and assaulted him, and I guess he went crazy and warded him off. And then through all the commotion, they ran away. My cousin's going to University of Miami, and that was his professor. And he's one of those spooky scientists that does all those chimeras and stuff like that. And he's on that list as, you know, they obviously were after him too, but they didn't get him. And it was a big write-up in the Miami Herald, too, I heard.
All right, fine. Well, of course, now we know that they've been doing these experiments, and this Dr. Lowe that you had a chance to talk to,
right,
was one of these who was involved in all these bizarre experiments on the American soldiers without their knowledge or consent. And, of course, if anybody doubts that this sort of thing goes on, you need to get our 4-tape set on Tuskegee. They got away with it there. They recruited 400 black men to experiment on. They all had syphilis, and the idea was not to treat them. It was not to treat them and let them die so they could autopsy them. Nobody was ever punished for that right here in America. Well, maybe that's why nobody really felt so bad when we brought Heinrich Mueller, the head of the Gestapo, over here to live out a comfortable life after the fall of Nazi Germany. Or why we brought so many of the Nazi scientists over here, the criminal Nazi scientists, people like the Angel of Death, Dr. Mengele, and I know three people here in this country have told me separately that they saw him traveling here in the United States, Dr. Mengele, the Angel of Death. But, of course, we don't want the American people to know that. We'll be back in just a moment with Mike, and if you have a question or comment, don't hesitate to call. But right now, this is the time we have to tell you that we are involved in a spiritual battle between good and evil. And today, evil is on the throne. For as James Russell Lowell wrote, the cause of evil prospers, and his truth alone is strong, though her portion be the scaffold and upon the throne be wrong. But that scaffold sways the future, for in the dim unknown standeth God within the shadows, keeping watch above his own. Well, evil is on the throne today, and whether you know it or not, why we are involved in a great spiritual battle, and Radio Liberty is on the front lines of that battle, getting the truth out, we need your help. If you believe that there's a problem, if you believe that you have an obligation to be involved in this, if you believe that your family, your friends, your future, your freedom are at stake, we hope that many of you will decide right now to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and you do this by calling us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And for a suggested gift of $20 a month or more, as much as you can afford, Why, you'll get our four best tapes of the month, you'll get our monthly newsletter, but more than that, you'll be helping us do what we do. And that is reach out across America 5 hours every day by radio, by internet, by shortwave, by satellite, and of course trying to inform people, and more people are waking up, but we're involved in a race against time. And with your help and God's help, perhaps we can have some effect. In the end, it's God's battle, but we're called to be involved. And the minister who tells you don't have to be involved is not preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ, in my estimation. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 right now.
Well, if there's any one tape that you should hear, it's my talk on geopolitics, an untold story that is vitally important if America is to survive as a free nation. It goes into the background of the forces that have created the wars of the 20th century, the Boer War, the First World War, the Second World War, Korea, Vietnam. We go into the ideological and the spiritual battle behind the forces that have moved America from crisis to crisis and are currently undermining the very fabric of our society. That number again, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and the tape, Geopolitics. It is vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of my talk on geopolitics.
Well, Dr. Stan back here. Our guest today is Mike, and we're not using his last name for very, very specific reasons, because when you speak out as he is speaking out, why, of course, you come under attack. And don't believe it can't happen here. And don't believe it always happens to somebody else. Well, right now we have Herman calling from Carmel. Hi, Herman. How are you doing?
Another fast on a different radio program, a commentator giving the quote, I don't know, mentioned Franklin, something about those who sell out for freedom for security will have neither.
No, basically that's the quotation from Benjamin Franklin. Who are willing to give up any bit of their individual liberty for security will eventually lose both liberty and security.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's something we certainly all need to think about, and again, in light of today's program, that we all pray, and again, we cannot see the other dimension that is mentioned, but those of us that of his one, I really, even though it may seem hopeless, I just encourage to pray for our leaders, for our country, pray for the rest of them, and you know, Jesus comes.
Well, I agree with you totally, Herman.
Right.
The thing is that we have to work as if it's up to us and pray as if it's up to God. But a prayer without works is, as James said, certainly is useless. We need to be involved. I believe God put us here to be involved. And the idea that we're not to be involved, I believe, is Lucifer's lie. Anything else you want to say, Herman?
One final note. I'm coming to your all-day conference, and I know there are others that are coming, and they may just buy a ticket for themselves, but why not do a friend a favor, invite somebody else? And if everybody would do that, in other words, when these things finally come down and people say, why didn't anybody tell us, you know, we're going to feel pretty ashamed. So I encourage...
Okay, we're having trouble with your telephone. It's cutting out on us.
Okay.
Thanks very much, and we hope people will take your advice.
Okay, thank
bye-bye,
you.
And God bless you. Okay, fine. That was Herman.
Hey, sir.
Yes, go ahead.
I have to say something about what you just said earlier. You know that experimentation started right after the World War II, and my great-grandfather was running buddies with the Hull brothers, Clarence and Warren Hull.
Uh-huh.
One was the Secretary of State, and the other one was Secretary of War.
Right. Cordell Hull was the Secretary of State, as I remember.
Right. Well, the long story on the short of that is my great-grandfather was, after fighting with Teddy Roosevelt in the Spanish-American War, he turned around and became one of the agents to the OSS.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing everybody needs to realize is that the OSS became the Central Intelligence Agency right after World War II. And he used to tell me stories about Galen,
General Galen, you mean the German general who we...
The intelligence guy?
Right, he was in charge of German intelligence, and after the war, why, we hired him to become our head of intelligence.
Right, and he changed CIA into a operative. It's pretty much the neo-Nazi version of the SS.
Well, you know, what most people don't know is that the OSS helped many of the Nazis to escape to South America.
Yes, sir.
That's covered in the book, The Medusa File, which we have, which you really need to get. And, of course, there's another book called Operation Paperclip. They're hard to track down, but you need to get this. The reason that, of course, the Nazis were able to live down there was that we never tried to do anything about them. And the only reason they ever got Adolf Eichmann is that a group of Jews, the Nazi hunters, tracked down Eichmann, smuggled him out of South America, took him back to Israel. But we intended for the rest of them to stay down there, live safely, just as we brought many of the Nazi scientists here to America to live under Operation Paperclip. You must understand the occult forces began working in our government in 1935 under Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And, of course, he then began putting these evil and wicked people into our government. At the same time, he put that evil emblem on the back of our dollar bill, the pyramid kept by the all-seeing eye. This is a symbol of the ancient mystery religions. And what you're seeing today is a manifestation of that evil in so many levels of our society. And the fact that our ministers and our churches and our religious leaders and our conservative leaders won't tell us that is one reason why we're in so much trouble today. Go ahead, Mike. Tell us a little bit more of this story.
Well, the long story short is my great-grandfather, we used to go fishing and stuff, and he would tell me all these horror stories about how it was Bill Donovan was one of the people he worked with. And
Wild Bill Donovan, right.
Yeah, and he worked with John Birch, too.
He was over there in China then.
Yeah. Well, they were all anti-communist people afterwards. I mean, my great-grandfather wound up living in South Florida during the Bay of Pigs invasion, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
And he would tell me about how what all he's done for nothing. And I was like, one day I asked him to explain himself, and he pretty much, you know, told me that, you know, America is no longer American. You know, it belongs to like an invisible entity and so forth.
Well, he's absolutely right. There is an invisible government. There is an invisible force. And I believe it's the force of Lucifer that has taken control of the reins of government. They're not very many of them, but they're well organized. They control the media. They control our universities. How many conservative professors are there at the universities? There aren't any. They don't allow them, in the humanities they're about as rare as hen's teeth today. They won't even allow a conservative to get a PhD. They call that academic freedom.
Yeah.
They only want one side to be heard. And anybody who doubts that needs to get the book, Foundations, Their Power and Influence, which we republished, a congressional committee report which went into exactly what I'm saying. And the tragedy is most Americans have never heard of this story or even heard of the book. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, long story short is, you know, after hearing all those stories, you know, I just thought I was an old man ranting and raving. And then, you know, when I actually have experienced it to the utmost level, and what I mean by that is I took them all on. I didn't hold back any punches. I went to the closed-door session of Congress and talked about the dead animals I saw and the dead people that were frozen in place by I don't know what weapon. I was told by a friend it was this weapon called Killzone, which is a pulse weapon.
Well, of course, we used a lot of experimental weapons over there in Desert Storm, didn't we? That was a great opportunity to see how a lot of these lethal weapons would work. And so we killed a lot of people, and well, we learned how the lessons work.
But the long story short is, I tried to fight City Hall, and I went all the way to the top. And the long story short was, you know, I was punished by way of the military for opening my big fat trap.
Well, now, didn't you actually testify before Congress, before the Congressional Committee?
Yes, sir. I was before Christopher Shea, and Christopher Shea actually wanted me not to say names and places. And then I said, sir, did you bring me here to hear what I have to say, or did you bring me here to hear what you want to hear? And then Bernard Sanders jumped in there right quick because I guess he saw that me and him are the same. So he jumped in there to defend me, and he goes, "Now, Mr. Zeller, let me just say, the reason why we don't want, you know, names and places would be that it would be a whole lot larger of an investigation, this, that, and the other.
And that
right
would,
now, we're not capable of having an expanded whatever. All we want to know is what possibly happened." And then I told him point blank, I said, "Well, sir," I said, "these diabolical individuals that pulled off all that they pulled off," I said, "they need to be held accountable and to a standard so that it never happens again, unless you want it to continue to happen." And then he just kind of winked at me and shrugged his shoulders, and then, you know, I just sat there for the next question.
Okay, fine. Well, you actually did testify, though. Is that testimony available anyplace?
Yeah, it's in Nexus Lexus or whatever, the storage facility for Congress.
Right.
It was June 26, 1997.
Okay, fine. And now, are you completely out of the military now?
Yeah. Well, actually, to tell you the truth, people that are in spec ops or special ops, you're not ever out of the military because you get phone calls all the time to do something in a suit, as they say.
Now, are you still doing things from time to time then for the military? Or
No. I got a kid that's real young, and I'm not going to go engage any kind of enemy and without them knowing who I am. So I want them to grow up to know who I am, and then maybe I'll do it when I'm a little older like my great-granddad did.
Well, I would hope that you wouldn't until we have people in positions of power who represent...
Well, that's what I would do. If I did do something like that, I would be a darn good Protestant or protester.
You have to do what's right. You can't do what you're told to do. And the great tragedy is we got a lot of people working for the CIA and in these special operations units who do what they're told to do without understanding the nature of the evil that they're supporting.
Well, I was totally... naive of the truth is what I'm trying to say, and until I had to live it, and now I know the lethality of government. Now I know that it's not for the people, by the people, and so forth. It's for the establishment, which this is another thing. My grandfather shared this with me. He said, never forget Eisenhower's
parting remarks, right?
When he got out as president,
right?
He talked about the military-industrial complex is going to be our enemy of the future.
And it is, of course.
Well, I mean, the vaccines we received are from the industrials mixing with the military.
Right. We call it the medical-industrial complex. Hey, we're out of time, Mike. Will you come back so we can?
Most definitely, sir.
And we'd love to get you on again. And I think
it's kind of scary that you're talking about things that, I mean, my family has been personally involved with.
Well, I think that some of your experience with some of the leading scientists, and we can talk more about that next time. Anyway, thanks so very much for being with us.
Yes, sir.
Good night. God bless.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was, of course, Mike, and Mike's paid a terrible price for going overseas to fight for freedom. And, of course, he's extremely ill today and incapable, really, of supporting himself at all. There are lots of stories like that, but you're not going to hear them, except perhaps on programs like this. I love America. We need to take it back. Do you love America enough to take a stand, to be involved in this battle between good and evil that's being fought today? If you are, we'd love to hear from you. We'd love to see you at the conference. Give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until Monday at the same time, Dr. Stan, goodbye. May the Lord be with you.